You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Samantha Foote. We dive into the important and maybe pretty commonly misunderstood world of adult ADHD. So we talk about Samantha's journey to a diagnosis, which she got in her mid-30s, and we talk about the personal transformation that followed for her. Along the way, just for fun, we also explore Samantha's love of boating and of volleyball, and she shares with me a crazy story of a Florida adventure that took an unexpected turn, and I love it. It's so fun for me because I think that probably everybody has a crazy Florida story. So if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's do this. Samantha Foote, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yay! Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am ready. It's going to be awesome.
Good. It is. All right. I start every interview by asking people where they're talking to me from. Where are you from? Where do you live?
I am currently by Boise, Idaho. Originally, I'm from like an hour away in Oregon in a small farming town. But yeah, right now I'm in Boise.
Boise. You and I actually got a chance to hang out together in Boise earlier this year, last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, true story. All right. So before we dive into the topic of the day, I want to dive in and learn a little bit more about you as a person. Tell us a little bit about you outside work. It could be family if you want, but maybe, you know, nicknames of your pets, a hobby you have, just something as little or as much as you want to tell us about you before we dive in.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking more about it, but I have ADHD and OCD, so that kind of affects my life a lot. And I love, love, love playing volleyball and boating. And the biggest, like, disappointment in my life right now is I don't personally know anyone with a boat, and it's very sad to me because I grew up, my dad had a boat when I grew up, and so we'd go boating, and now I have no one to go with, and it's just... So if anyone is listening and is by Boise and wants to take me boating, there you go. That's my
plea.
There
you go. That's and the best way to do that. The whole thing. I mean, I love boating. I grew up. My father had a boat, and I don't own a boat. And all of my kids have wondered why I didn't run out and buy a boat. And the reason is because I grew up taking care of the boat with my dad, right? So like, make friends, children, make friends with boats. This is the best way to do this, to make friends with boats. Yep. So I fully support that. Promise to be a good guest on the boat, do my share, and then let you have the boat. That's the greatest way to do that. Thank you so much. All right. So the topic of the day, you like let us right in there, is getting the diagnosis that you, finding out that you're not lazy. Those are your words. I didn't Right, yeah. That I borrowed them from you because you got a diagnosis of something else, ADHD. So let's talk about that. How's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right, let's do it. So I want to back up and talk about you as a kid because you're no longer a kid. You're a fully formed grown up. But when you were a kid, what kind of feedback did you get from people that were like teachers and coaches and adults in your life about you as a person? Like, what were you like?
I talked a lot. And that was the only time I ever got in trouble at school was when I was talking. And I talked to everyone and anyone that would listen. And my mom was like, you talk all the time. And I always felt very ashamed for that. And I got super, super excited. And then I would get very, very depressed. So I felt my feelings. And everyone always called me Little Joan because my grandma's name is Joan and my grandma felt her feelings. I am convinced that she also had ADHD. And everyone, like, I don't think they meant to bring shame to me for like feeling my feelings, but everyone was always like, why are you crying? Or why are you so excited? You need to tone it down. Everyone was always telling me to tone it down. But in school, I was fantastic. I was super afraid of getting in trouble. And so I had really, really bad anxiety that I was going to get in trouble. And if I didn't perform, like get all A's, even in like elementary school, if I didn't get A's on my paper or whatever, I would have like internal panic attacks, but
Wow.
no one could know what I was actually going through. And then when I was in high school, I actually got all the signs of diabetes because of stress,
Yes.
because I was like, I have to get all A's. I have to be like the perfect kid. I have to do all this stuff because if I wasn't perfect, then people weren't going to like me. And so that's kind of how I grew up. Like, I had a happy childhood, but all of that was like under the surface, you know?
That is really interesting. I think that that is a connection. We're not going to talk about it today, but it's something that might surprise some people listening that you can manifest the symptoms of diabetes, including irregular sugar results that show up on a blood stick, and it's maybe not metabolic, it's just stress. It's like the craziest thing. I just learned that in the last couple of years, because I would have, if you had asked me that 10 years ago, I'd have been like, ah, that's nuts. That's nonsense. But it's an interesting thing about the whole mind-body connection. All right. So you enjoyed school growing up, and we think of, or I think maybe this is an old-fashioned thing, I think of the typical first sign of somebody who might have had old school ADHD, we know a lot more about it now, being the kid who struggles to hold still in the classroom, which is why I thought I'd ask about it. But you enjoyed it.
I loved it. And that's the difference between like stereotypical ADHD, where it's boys and boys have a hard time sitting down, and girls can too. But for the most part, ADHD in girls is internal, not external. And so my mind was going like super, super fast, but I looked like I was calm. But inside, I was going super fast, and just my mind was going. I had racing thoughts, and I just couldn't keep my attention on one thing. It was just going from thing to thing to thing because I was thinking so many different thoughts. And so, yes, to your point, stereotypical ADHD usually starts with boys who can't sit still.
Yeah, no, and I could not sit still in the classroom. I've never been a fan of sitting still in the classroom, and that I don't know. I've never been given a diagnosis, so it can be a topic of debate whether or not Amy should head out and get this as a. So, how old were you when you got the diagnosis?
I was 36, so I got it just 2 years ago. Yeah.
2 years ago. All right, so this is pretty recent. So, walk me through what was going on that led you to ask or inquire or look in this direction with your doctors in order that led to the diagnosis? Like, what were the things that were happening that you were like, I should ask about this? Or did it come from somewhere else? Somebody was like, you know what you should do? No.
It was interesting because when I said I had ADHD, people were like, no, you don't. You're not hyperactive. You're not all these things. And I said, well, yes, I am. Like, so it was interesting. Like, the people, like my parents were like, you don't have that. And I said, well, yes, I do. And they accepted it pretty quick. They weren't like headstrong, like, you do not have this, you know? But it was. I've always struggled with like my emotions, my racing thoughts, intrusive thoughts, all of that. And so when I was 28, I got diagnosed with OCD. And that was just by a counselor. So I didn't really get like an official diagnosis. She just said, you might want to look into OCD. And I'm like, oh, this explains my whole life, you know? But I still had those like emotions that were. Would go back and forth, and I didn't even know that was part of ADHD. And so I had a pretty significant postpartum experience where I had a nervous breakdown. I'll just say that. Like, I blacked out. I totally forgot everything that happened. I lost a whole afternoon of my life. And so that's when I saw a psychiatrist, and she's like, you have bipolar disorder. But when she diagnosed me with bipolar disorder, she said, you don't really fit into this box, but I'm going to check this box so that we can have your insurance cover medication. And so, yeah. And so she says that to a lot of people, like, you don't really have this, but I have to check a box. And so I'm going to do this. But I never felt like bipolar disorder really fit me because I would have like highs and lows, but they weren't like I wouldn't go on shopping sprees or have these manic episodes. And I wouldn't be so depressed I couldn't get out of bed. You know how they kind of describe bipolar disorder? Like, they're. And then It was the era of TikTok, and I just started watching all these videos.
As one does.
And yeah, as one does in 2020, I started watching all these videos, and I was like, man, I think I might have ADHD because they were describing how they had like these ranges in emotions and they would talk really fast and their mind was going really fast, but then they were paralyzed by a decision and they couldn't. Like, I would just sit on my couch with everything around me needing to be done, and I couldn't do anything because I was so overwhelmed by everything. And so they talked about that and talked about having anxiety. And I'm like, I think that I might have ADHD, not bipolar disorder. So I talked to my psychiatrist, and she said, you don't need an ADHD diagnosis unless you want medication, and you don't need medication for ADHD.
Okay, so
And
I started to giggle when you start we're talking about
Yeah.
TikTok, and I just want to address the fact that I was not giggling at the severity of the situation, but that is how we research things
Yeah.
now, and especially TikTok is very good at this because you start watching a cat video and then it feeds you another cat video and 3 hours go by and you're like then an expert on, specialty diseases with so that is why I giggled. I love that. It's actually a wonderful thing that we're able to research these things, and TikTok gets a really bad rap, and so does all of social media. But it is beautiful in that it will show you people's personal experiences, which is what it looks like for them. So you can actually see it and be like, oh, that does remind me of what I'm going through. And I have not experienced it, but that paralysis with everything all around you is a thing that people talk about. About ADHD, that you've got 100 things to do. You know you need to clean, but you're not gonna do it. You're gonna sit on your couch and think about it.
Yep.
So I did not mean to be making light of what we were talking about. So then your doctor tells you that you don't need medication for this. Had they started you on mood stabilizers for bipolar?
I was on mood stabilizers. It took me a year or two to find the right combination. And she said, you are good with your medication. But I always felt like my medication was just like I was in a better place. Then obviously when I had the nervous breakdown, but I didn't feel totally like myself. And
Yeah.
so, but I didn't know. I just trusted her and I said, okay, like I guess I don't need a diagnosis. And she's like, you might have ADHD, but you don't need medication. So I said,
Okay.
okay.
So you trusted her, but how did it make you feel when she said that to you?
It was very invalidating.
Yeah.
I
The way you
just,
tell it sounds like dismissive, like really.
yeah, it was very dismissive. Just like, oh, you don't need to worry about that. It doesn't matter what your diagnosis is. You just need to be on the right medication, which I
Which
really
could
don't
have been
agree with.
true.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if she'd gotten it right, like, and you were feeling fine, but if you were feeling fine and the medication was right, you may not have gone on the TikTok binge.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
So
Yeah.
you were on medication. You had, how old was your, how old was the baby when you had the postpartum experience?
So I had a 2-year-old and a 4-month-old.
And so you were in the thick of it. You were in
Yeah,
the thick
yeah,
of postpartum. Yeah. That's
yeah.
the thing that I'm definitely not an expert on or anything, but it is absolutely a part of the life experience that needs more evaluation and more research and more people talking about it because it happens a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a tough time, right? Because you're not getting any sleep. Nobody's getting any sleep in the whole house. Your body is going through a massive physical and hormonal adjustment, which is ridiculous, just absolutely ridiculous. And it must just be impossible for it's you don't I didn't know what was happening to my body when I was going through it. How could I expect a doctor to walk me through what was
Yeah.
happening? It was changing by the moment. So that is, I'm very sad. I thank you for sharing that, but I'm sad that you went through it. And it was undoubtedly a really tough time to reach out and ask for support from. So you got some, though. You did get
Yeah,
help. You
I
got
did
some
get
from
help.
them.
They told me I should have called 911 when that happened, but I was really afraid that they were going to take my kids. And
Yeah.
so I did not. I called everyone that I knew, and no one seemed to answer the phone. But then
Oh.
that's when I blacked out. And then my mother-in-law just like showed up at my house, and I just remember waking up and feeling better. So,
Oh my goodness.
but yeah, so if you ever are in that situation, they won't take your kids away. They will
Well,
help you. But yeah, they're like, you're, yeah.
that is what 911 is for, and I've had wonderful and negative experiences calling rescue services. But I had a conversation with somebody a couple of years ago who was it was a story that we heard about somebody who did call rescue. She was a caretaker for her parents, and her senior parent fell, and she called rescue. And this other person in the story was like, "Wow, why did she do that?" And I thought, "No, that is why we call rescue. Like
Yeah.
we should really destigmatize calling rescue when you need help, because you call because you need help. And if you call them and they cannot help you, they will tell you. They
Yeah,
will tell
yeah.
you that you have called the wrong people, and they will hang up on you." I validate that it can be scary. It can be really
Yeah.
scary to be making that decision. So you have this diagnosis, which actually went OCD and then bipolar disorder and then ADHD, which your doctor was lumping in. You were going through a medication treatment, which was helping a little bit. Did they suggest anything else? Lifestyle changes, morning meditations? Was there any sort of other stuff that you were looking at?
They said they couldn't serve me unless I was in counseling. So that
Okay.
was a stipulation that I had to be in counseling if I was going to that psychiatrist's office, which I
Okay.
appreciate because I think that if you are going through that, like you definitely should get counseling.
And so was that helpful?
It was really helpful. It would definitely help me like just put things into perspective and learn some coping skills of what I could do, like if I ever started feeling, like bad again, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I think that's pretty comprehensive. I think that's encouraging that they were doing both things. Were you able to convince your psychiatrist to come around to you and talk to you about the ADHD, or is she still not?
I never did, but I went to my primary care doctor, and my thyroid was acting weird, and so she put me on some thyroid medication, and it wasn't working. So she said, "This should be working unless you have ADHD." And
Wow.
I said, "About that, I think I do." And so she was able to do the ADHD testing, and she called me, and she just said, "Yeah, you most definitely have ADHD. Your ADHD is like off the charts." And so
Okay.
she started me on a stimulant, and it was so interesting. When I started taking that stimulant, it was like I could be the person that I always wanted to be, but I just could never quite reach. And so my anxiety, I feel like, is a normal person's anxiety now. Like I can leave the house and not have a panic attack that I left something on or I didn't lock the door or something like that, But yeah, so I've been on a stimulant in addition to my other medication, and I feel like that was like the missing link to me feeling like myself.
That is so interesting. Do you know the comedian Taylor Tomlinson? She has that hilarious skit where she talks about you don't actually know what your diagnosis is till you take all of your prescriptions home and Google them by yourself. And yours is a different variety of that, where it was like you were like Googling and talking to one doctor, and then you went to another doctor who was like, "Well, have you thought about this?" And you're like, "Well, listen, let's talk about it," because in one sense, it's good. I want to give you validation for advocating for yourself continuously, which is really hard to do, I think. And so you did that. How long did this all take, like working with these two different doctors before you got the third component?
Let's see, it was 2023 when I started. So it was about 7, no, 6 years. It was 6 years.
6 years. Wow. So that is a really long time. I feel like it would be so much better for people if it didn't take that long. And I wish that I was less surprised that it was that long. I mean, I was probably going to guess, but a lot of people I know have worked on complicated diagnoses and autoimmune things, and I hear their stories 3 to 4 years before they get something where people are like, "This is what's going on." 6 years. Wow. That is a really long time.
Yeah, it took a while because I was just like, well, if the psychiatrist doesn't think I need it, then I'm fine. I just have to be fine.
This is
And
what
that
fine is. This is
this is
fine for
just
me.
what fine feels like, you know?
Yeah.
And I just always felt like there was something missing. And then when I found it, I was like, oh,
Yeah.
this is amazing.
So, and how quickly when you started the stimulants, how quickly did you notice the difference?
Oh, within an hour
Really?
of taking the stimulant. Yeah, it was that day. And I, within an hour of taking it, I felt more clear-headed. I didn't have the brain fog. I could actually do the things that I wanted to do instead of just sitting there and being paralyzed. And my anxiety, like within a day or two, I really noticed my anxiety going down. So yeah, it was pretty quick.
I mean, I have heard so many stories about the positive impact of this. So it's interesting. I do think it's hard for people who don't have a condition to actually fully understand what it feels like for the people who do. We can
Yeah.
try. We should try. It's something we should always be open to for sure. But I do think that it can be hard. So I wanted to ask you if you could pick like 3 to 5 words, and some of them will be a repeat of things you've said already, right? To describe how you felt after you were diagnosed and the treatment was working. Like, how do you describe it?
Freeing, definitely freeing, and just I don't know, like just being the person that I always wanted to be, that I knew
Yeah.
I could be.
But before, you just couldn't
But
get there.
before, I just couldn't quite get there.
But you had a sense that it was out there. That's the thing. It feels, when people describe it, I think it feels like I want people to get their things worked out. Yeah, I'm so thankful for people who find a combination that works for them. Doesn't always work for everybody, I'm sure. But it just feels like before you had the sensation that there was something better that you couldn't quite get to. And that seems like an unpleasant place to be.
Yeah, because everyone always told me, oh, it's just self-discipline. You just have to be more self-disciplined. I can guarantee you, I was one of the most self-disciplined people on the planet because I was so afraid of getting in trouble. I wanted to be the perfect person. And I was just like, no one's going to love me if I'm not perfect. And so I tried to be like the very best that I could. But it's not like a self-discipline thing. Like, when I would sit there paralyzed, I wanted to do the thing. I just could not. It was the weirdest feeling.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think I've felt it, but I appreciate the description because I think it's common. I think there's a chance that there are people out there that are listening who are experiencing a sense of it. And it takes, I wish that this were not the case, but it takes self-advocacy and determination and keep asking the people if you've got access to people who can help you. And your story is not, this part of the story is not awesome because you live through it, but it is the reality that a lot of times we go to the people who are supposed to help us and we're like, I don't think this is quite right. And they're like, no, trust me. I'm the one that went to med school. I
Yeah.
didn't go to med school. Nobody should ever accept a diagnosis from me. But, I think that I call it the hill I might die on, which is like, hey, we need to push sometimes. We need to push and say, like, why not? All right. So it is my impression, as somebody who is not qualified to have this impression, but that some part of this like diagnosis for ADHD for adult women, because you and I are both adults, is like almost like a modern phenomenon that's happening to a group of people right now, right? And I hope that that means that younger women, younger girls are getting this diagnosis earlier. Like, I really feel like there was like a whole wave of people who I knew, like over the past several years, who were like, oh my gosh, I got this diagnosis. My life is so much better. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, everybody all at once? That's crazy. But everybody, there's a piece of this which you so accurately described. You had to advocate for this with your team and do that. And so I think that's important to validate that again. And also, there's another piece of this that you were super open to the intervention and the treatment of these things, which I think is really interesting. Did you struggle with that at all?
I didn't. Okay, I felt some kind of shame at like needing medication, but I got over it. But in the beginning, I was like, I shouldn't need this. I should just be self-disciplined and do what I need to do. And but when your brain chemistry is off, there's nothing, you can't self-discipline your way into like having good brain chemistry, you know? Like
Right.
if it's off, it's off, and there's nothing you can do about that except, you know, take medication, you know, have a healthy lifestyle, definitely like exercise and eating right and hydrating, like that all helps. But I think there comes a time when you need the medication, and that's okay.
Right. Yeah. And so
Yeah.
you got over it quickly, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it also sounds like you mentioned that your family was initially like, well, we don't think you have that, but they came around. Was that an important, was it was probably supportive and that they came around and were like, yeah, we're with you on this.
It was really awesome when they're like, oh yeah, like I can see it. Now, when I like told them what it was and what the symptoms were and all of that, they said, oh, well, yeah,
Well,
that
now that
makes
you've
sense.
described it like it, I can see it.
Yeah.
The shame thing about medication is a weird thing. I think we've all sort of felt it. Like it's like, oh, I shouldn't need help in this. You know, I shouldn't need a tutor for school. I should just be able to do it. I shouldn't need support. And it is also strange how we do sort of cat it's only for certain things that we shame people. Like I don't know that anybody gets shamed for taking Tylenol for a headache.
Yeah.
You know, I maybe in some circles they do, but it is definitely the reality though that there is a risk of being shamed when people find out that you have something that falls into the category of mental health. You know, it's like it's a whole different category, and it cracks me up as an adult. Made sense to me when I was a kid before I knew to question these things, but it's like we fragment the treatment of health into these specialty categories. So it's like you have your doctor, but they don't take care of your teeth. That's a
Yeah.
special person that's over there, right? And they don't take care of your eyes. That's also a special thing, as if you could like separate your eyes from your body. Like why do we make this? And then we separate the mental health as if there's somebody walking around who doesn't have a brain inside their body. Like why are these different categories? Like when I think about it, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get it. And
Yeah.
so it's like, what do you have any feedback for people who might be going through anything in their life and struggling with the guilt or the shame that they think they're going to be judged or that they're not strong enough and they don't deserve the help?
I would say reach out to a support group if you
Okay.
need that. So, like NAMI, NAMI has fantastic groups. Reach out to friends if you know that they have a diagnosis. You know, you can reach out to them and say, I think this might be going on. Because if anyone's going to understand it, it's someone who's been diagnosed, they've gone through the
Yes.
process. But yeah, I would just look for that support where you can find it. And I want to say, like, get over it, because once you get your mental health, like once you get your mental health in a good place, I always wonder why I didn't do it sooner. Like, why didn't I
Yeah.
find help sooner? Because it's so freeing, like I said before, and it's you just feel so much better about your life. But that is a hard place to get to, especially if you come from a family that doesn't like they value mental health, but they don't understand mental health. And so they're like, you just need to push through it, or you just need to be strong, or, you know, any of those kinds of things. Or like, don't feel your emotions, just put on a brave face and all of that. If you come from a family like that, then you'll need to find outside support to help you advocate for yourself in getting a diagnosis.
Right, and getting through it. One way to look at getting through it is doing the work and trusting the people who've walked through before that the payoff at the end is the reason that it's worth all the work. So
Yeah.
when you're in the middle of it, it doesn't you can't see the end in the middle. And so when people say, you know, this is going to be worth it, try really hard to believe them. There's so many transformations in life that are like that. It's like I know this is hard, but the end is going to probably be worth it, and you won't know till you get there. So that's very it. All right. So in a minute, we're going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to actually tell people what you do, which is completely different from what we've been talking about today.
Yeah.
But tell people about what you do professionally and how people can find and connect with you online.
So I am a board certified music therapist. I actually work with neurodivergent kids and adults, so people who have autism, ADHD, developmental disabilities. And then I also work with their parents in raising them, like teaching positive parenting strategies, mastering their own self-regulation so they can help their kids self-regulate, and then understanding what autism, ADHD, other neurodivergent diagnoses are. And you can find more information at everybrainisdifferent.com. You can find me on Instagram at everbrainisdifferent. And yeah, if you're interested in that.
Very good. So interestingly, you were telling your story, and you were saying that you had a concept of yourself as somebody who was lazy and wasn't getting things done. And as somebody who's known you for a couple of years, that was such a disconnect in my mind, because you have this amazing business that you built, and it's an enormous amount of work. So I was thinking to myself, I was like, wow, that is interesting to me as someone who knows you from the outside, because it shows the different perceptions we have. You have an amazing special offer for the listeners, which is called Rhythms to Relief, which is a powerful connection between music and well-being. It's a video where you'll discover how music can be a game changer for stress relief, emotional regulation, and overall mental health. No musical talent required. Normally, this is $97, but for the audience, you have a coupon that lets them get it for free, which is an amazingly generous thing. There's a link in the show notes. Samantha, I want to thank you for that generous offer. That is really, really generous. And for anybody who's listening, who wants to, or watching and wants those links, but you're driving or you're listening in your headphones or on a treadmill or whatever, you don't have to remember them now. You can click on them in the show notes. Or if you're subscribed to the Imperfect Adulting email community, there's a link right in the email and you just click on it. It takes you right there. Perfect for busy people. Yay! Now, let's get back to the conversation. It's time. I'm going to ask you three questions and you say whatever comes to mind just for fun. So, music is a part of your life. What is your favorite type of music to dance to?
I like songs from like the 2000s when I was in college, like
Okay.
Rihanna and Cascada. Is that how you say that? Anyway, and those kinds of songs, like just like that you'd hear at the club that I never went to, but I went to school sponsored dances,
Okay.
and that's where I lived my best life, was on the dance floor. So,
I
yeah.
did know that you love to dance when I wrote this question. Sometimes I don't know the people when I write the question, but I did know that you love to dance, and that's one of the things. All right. Do you have a favorite time of the day? Morning, noon, sunset, late night? What's your favorite time of the day?
Lately, it's been early morning. I, for some reason, my body just wakes up at 4:30 in the morning lately. I don't know why. I've never been like that, but I love waking up and just having the peace in the house before my kids get up and my husband gets up and everyone's running around. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah,
So,
it
yeah.
really is. It really is. I have experienced that myself. Even if it's only 1 minute before the kids get up, it's one great minute. All right. So you and I actually got to see each other last year a couple of times. One of those is when you came to visit Florida, and we saw each other. One of the jokes, I think you probably know about this. One of the jokes people make about Florida is all about the weird things that Florida man does. So we'll see. This is either going to be a good, funny question, or it's going to be ridiculous. What was the strangest thing that you saw when you were here in Florida on your trip?
I don't okay. So I thought I was getting trafficked when I was in Florida.
I
Because
love that I asked you this. I just absolutely love that I asked you this. Okay.
I went to Florida for the Taylor Swift concert, and we had to be bused from a parking garage to the venue, and then we were bused back to the parking garage. Well, when we went to the venue, it took like 10 minutes. And
Okay.
then when we were coming back from the venue, I was just on my phone, just chilling. And then I realized that 30 minutes had gone by. And I look up and we're in the middle of a neighborhood. And I had no idea what was going on. And I looked at my husband and I said, "What is going on?" And he's like, yeah, I'm a little bit afraid. I was like, what, that we're gonna get murdered? He's like, no, that we're gonna get trafficked.
That they've taken an entire bus
Yeah.
of people that are at the Taylor Swift concert, and they're going to ship you off to Taiwan to, like, or where, I don't know where. I shouldn't have used an actual country name. They're going to ship you off to some exotic foreign location where you're going to have to knit scarves for people.
Yeah, and then I honestly think the bus driver was just lost or something because he was on his phone. Yeah, that was the other thing. He was on his phone, and me and my husband were like, they're planning where to take us. They're planning what to do with us. And then he gets off his phone, turns around, and we're back at the parking garage in 5 minutes.
That's so, he was on, like, Waze trying to find, like, a
Yeah,
route, and it
yeah.
was
It
like,
was,
you have been rerouted. You have
yeah.
been rerouted.
Yeah, it
I
was so funny though.
that is a typical Florida experience, and I'm thrilled that I asked this question. All right, that's it, Samantha. Thank you so much for being an amazing guest on The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.